Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Chaz, welcome back to the show, The Grit, for December 19th, 2017, dude.
It's Happy John John Day today.
Yeah, Merry Christmas and Happy John John Day.
Happy John John.
You said you're still recovering from celebrating?
I wasn't celebrating, but I did drink way too much last night, and you know when you drop into bed totally dizzy and think, oh man, that's uncool. That's
I remember from high school. No, well,
you don't do that
maybe,
now?
Dude, I know my tolerance levels now, and I don't let it get to that point. Maybe once a year it gets to that point.
Sure.
But you're talking about like looking at the ceiling in the room spinning.
Yeah.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
That's how you were feeling?
It was a big accident. I was just popping bubs alongside John John.
Bubbly?
No.
Okay.
It was beer and bourbon, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I drank a bottle of Chaz Smith Cabernet last night.
Oh, nice.
Charles Smith.
I know. Charles Smith. He has some good branding. We talked about him a little bit, haven't we?
We did, yeah. And I was at Costco, and I saw it there, and I'm like, you know what? I haven't had that in a while. I'll give that a go. And it was actually
was it good?
Really, it Charles was very,
Smith.
Very good.
It's from Washington, isn't it?
Yeah.
I emailed him before a long time ago. I think I told him.
No reply.
Yeah, no reply, nothing.
By the way, when I interviewed Warshaw, he referred to you as Charlie, and a buddy reached out, and he's like, hey, is Chaz's name really Charles? I was like, yeah, you didn't know that? Chaz is short for Charles? And he's like, I had no idea.
Wow. Yeah, if I was born a Chaz, that would be the douchiest thing ever.
Would it be?
I would think so.
Douchier than just going by Chaz?
Yeah, I mean, both are really douchey.
Okay.
But I think that, I guess my parents would have been way douchier if they would have named me Chaz. In this scenario, I guess my dad is the douche at the end, though, because my dad, that's where Chaz, I mean, my dad always called me Chaz. He was actually the only one who would call me Chaz.
Oh, really?
And so when I started writing, I just used Chaz, but which I don't know why I did that, but yeah, maybe
it's funny when people,
homage to my father.
It's funny when people type it in the comments section or on Instagram and they use a Z.
Oh, yeah.
C-H-A-Z, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's Chaz Bono.
Also, when it has your name in the byline, like as the author, as an S, and they're still using a Z, that always makes me laugh.
Yeah.
All right, well, shout out to the Surf Rider Foundation, where we are here sitting. This is our home studio, surfrider.org. You can become a member for $25 a month, or a year, actually.
It's a good gift, a good Christmas gift, I reckon.
That's true. It is a good gift.
Feel good giving it and getting it.
How do you feel, though, like whenever somebody in your family says, oh, I don't need anything, I don't want anything, just make a donation to this charitable cause?
Yeah, it's lame.
So lame,
It's
right?
super lame. But I think with Surfrider, don't you get a, you get the sticker, and so you can feel better than people on the road? I think that's what part of the big part of Surfrider, I feel, is, just feeling better than everybody else.
Yeah,
right?
I agree. And I think that you should give that gift and then get them a physical gift.
Precisely,
as well, Like, I'm down... That kid in Uganda needs a goat, and I'm down to gift him that goat. Yeah. But additionally, I would like to hand you something other than an envelope.
Than a goat.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it.
So you surfed since we last saw each other?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought I saw you wrote something saying that you surfed.
Nope. I have surgery scheduled. So my non-surfing days are almost, or they have a, they have an end date.
Okay. How's that going?
The surgery?
The not surfing experience.
Oh, it's pretty lame. It's the longest I haven't surfed in maybe my whole life. Well, not my whole life, but in a long while, which, it's just a bummer. It's a bummer when you drive by and see perfect waves and don't care because you can't do anything about it.
Have you, has it affected your life negatively? Do you find that like, you now you don't have a release or therapy or any of that stuff?
I find that I'm more kind of like just bopping along, I don't do things as quickly. Like, I don't know, surfing, I think, you know, you fit in that hour and a half or whatever, and then it makes you, oh, dang, I'm late on this or I'm late on that. And so you're really focused. So I feel I've lost focus. Mm. Like, I'll just kind of putter around a lot more now and not get stuff done.
Do you have any other physical activities in your life to stay fit?
No, I just thought yesterday I better start doing something because I'm going to get like skinny fat.
Could you imagine?
Skinny fat is the worst, too.
It is the worst. Yeah. When it goes straight to the belly.
And you just have a little, belly. It's the worst look ever.
It really is. So when I interviewed Warshaw, it was part of his, you know, fundraising campaign.
Yeah.
And that was one of the conversations that we had was like, he's living in Seattle, obviously, sure. And he's removed from surf. And he views it as kind of beneficial to his life.
He does. I think Warshaw told me before that he kind of needed it to be a good father. Like he has a young son up there and that, with the constant tug of surf, it's just, it gets in your way. But I think Warshaw is properly a proper surf junkie in a way that maybe I'm not. Like Warshaw, I think just is surf crazy. Right.
Yeah.
I think he was.
Certainly was for a long time.
Yeah.
I think, also it's important to, I think, balance. Everybody tries in the end of their, learning experience in life or whatever it is. It's like, they all come to the conclusion of balance is what I always hear from people. And so it's like, you're obsessed about it for a period of time. And then you need to take a break for a period of time. And then you realize, well, if you can just
do it, okay.
Surf when it fits into your schedule and not ditch work because of it or ditch family obligation because of it. That is when it provides benefit in your life.
So. I will say it's real hard though. Like when the waves are pumping back home and when I was in the water, just getting that jittery, like, oh man, when you know it's good, it's really hard not to at least, want to be out there.
But then there's times where you know it's good and you cannot be there because you have other obligations and then you feel anxiety all day long.
Precisely.
And you hate it.
Precisely.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
I don't know that you could ever live a balanced surfing life, to be quite frank.
It's a good point.
I think you can't. Like, I think if you like to surf, if it's pumping and you're missing it, you're going to feel the jitters. Maybe somebody is and you can email or reach out if you don't care when it's pumping and you're not surfing. Sometimes when I'm surfed out, I feel real gluttonous about not surfing. And I love that feeling when it's pumping, but you've surfed so much that you're just
surfed out's a good feeling.
Yeah.
It's a feeling of accomplishment.
Totally.
Partially.
Yep.
Well, I'm sorry that you can't enjoy your downtime.
It's okay. I'm not enjoying anything right now. Just drinking and spinning.
The drinking makes it worse too, man. It's a depressant. let's congratulate Derek on his book release.
Derek Riley is a famous now. He is famous in Australia.
Is it really like a huge famous success? Yeah, not just in the little.
No, it is a proper. I mean, Bob Hawke was Australia's most, I think, most beloved, most popular prime minister ever, right? And so it'd be like me having a best-selling book with, Bill Clinton, I don't think is the most loved ever, but say
it'd be, I think, like Barack would be a good example.
Yeah, but I think Barack is too fresh.
Yeah.
Like it'd be a, like it's a, you know, Bob Hawke hasn't been prime minister for a while. So it'd be like doing a book, a super interesting book with Bill Clinton.
Right.
Where here it would be also, if it was well-written, it would be a massive bestseller too, just because, and it's not just the Bob Hawke's biography. Like Derek's not a ghostwriter in the thing. It's Tuesday or Wednesdays with Bob, right? Where Derek went every Wednesday and hung out with this 80-year-old man, drinking beers and just chit-chatting about politics and love and whatever else. And I think Bob Hawke is an interesting character too. So yeah, it's a massive, massive hit in Australia.
Did Derek get hired for that job or did he know him organically somehow?
No, Derek. So my publisher from Australia for Welcome to Paradise, and I'll go to hell, her name is Jean. She's awesome. I think she's French, Belgian, Australian. There might be something else mixed in there. Amazing. She had met Derek. I can't remember when. It was either around the release of my book or for some reason, and asked Derek, what book do you want to write? And Derek just told her, I want to do a book about Bob Hawke. And somehow someone knew him and reached out and he was amenable to it, which is totally ridiculous anyway. And so off they went.
Especially as like a first time author.
Yeah, totally. No.
Crazy.
And, you know, and the way it's being built in Australia, too, is like this Bondi surfer and, you know, Australia's most loved prime minister have a chit-chat, so.
Which I think they're a lot more open to the idea of a surfer being involved in with the prime minister in Australia than they would here.
Yeah,
obviously, maybe. Surf culture is a lot more
totally
acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, Derek is smart and stuff, and so yeah, I think that yeah. I'm sure they had yeah.
Can I get a copy of the book in the U.S.?
You cannot. You can get it on Kindle, I think.
Right.
You can get it on a digital version, but I don't think you get a hardbound copy. But yeah, I think you can get. We'll figure out the link and put it on.
It was Surfsplendor. It was free through Kindle if you have Amazon Prime.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I didn't even have to pay for it.
That's amazing.
But I don't have Kindle.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, I think you might have to have Kindle.
Right.
I think.
So, but then there was a link on the publisher's website to purchase the book.
Yep.
But I think then you'd have to pay whatever to get it shipped from Australia here. Yep. So I just figured I'd wait it out until it was available here. Yep. But you have no idea when that might be.
I don't think it'll ever be available here as okay. as a book.
Okay.
Though maybe, I guess. I don't know. I mean, right. I think it's such a... That's a crazy thing about Australia. It always totally blows me away that a whole continent of 20 million people, it's basically greater LA, can yeah. support any kind of economy of anything. The yeah. fact that they can write their own books and, you know, do all that. Like, yeah. I mean, what's America? 300 million?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I think it is. I think America's 300 million. Australia's 20 million. Just yeah. I think it's just over 20 million.
Interesting.
Entire country.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, congratulations to Derek. We'll put a link to that book in case you're in Australia or anywhere else. Let's get into the Pipe Masters first. And
let's
then since that's so fresh, John Florence is our... two-time world champ now. Jeremy Flores became the two-time pipe master, and Gabriel continued to be everybody's favorite villain.
Man, people are really kicking Gabby.
Yeah.
God hates him, even, which is a real bummer.
I saw that article headline. Did you want to give any general thoughts on the event before I break down individual?
Yeah. You know, okay, so it hadn't run, right, for a long time.
Right.
It was a long waiting period, stretched out due to, I guess, bad winds. I don't know. I wasn't there on the mm-hmm. North Shore, but they were claiming
massive
bad winds.
Massive surf, but
yeah,
bad winds.
Massive surf, but bad winds. And I was thinking, I was sitting at home thinking, first, come on, who cares? Like, make them paddle out into massive surf and bad winds. Like, people like wipeouts, right? And it'll be fun. It'll be entertaining. Maybe it won't be the you know, finest surfing ever done, but it'll be entertaining. Aren't we in the business of entertainment here is what I was thinking.
Right.
Then I thought, well, this dang waiting period is going so long. And Derek sent me a text that said, Surf Ranch is better than Pipeline, right? Because it's consistent. And so I thought, well, no, it's not. But I'll write the story just for fun anyway. But and then as the window stretched, I was thinking, well, man, like, is there something to... you know, consistency. But then when Pipe finally came back on, I said, of course not ever. Like it was, I thought the Pipe conditions, even though they weren't epic, were so enjoyable to watch mm-hmm. for those. Did it run 3 days in a row? I think it did. Right? Or was it two?
I think it was 2 days in a row.
Two days.
The first day they finished round one. Yeah, so they only ran like four heats.
But when they came back in.
Two full days.
Okay. Yeah. So those 2 full days was some of the more enjoyable surf watching that yeah. I had done all year,
yeah.
right? I mean, part of it was the storylines and all that, but part of it was really fun. Like,
yeah.
and are you going to wait for the, you know, the bigger barrels? Are you going to poach the inside and get those small runners that just went forever? You know, I mean, there was some Italo, I think, was throwing some airs. Like there was enjoyable things happening almost every single heat, and which to me was the exact opposite of anything that's ever going to happen at Surf Ranch, right? Where you're not yes. going to be hunting this wave or that wave. You're not going to be sitting over on this part of the reef or that part of the reef. Like the variability that went into those 2 days, I thought it was just wonderfully enjoyable.
I couldn't agree more. It's my favorite event of the year for a lot of those reasons. I watched the surfline cams of Pipeline on those massive days that they didn't run.
Yeah.
And it was unsurfable.
Yeah.
Like the commissioners made the right call sure. for sure. Like I would agree with you, like just throw them out there into crazy conditions.
Unruly nastiness and see who shines.
If it was challenging and then there were results, but there was not, it wasn't even surfable.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
And they clearly made I guess
yeah.
I wanted them to throw them out there because I thought when it was going to come, when Pipe was going to come back, it was going to be, you know, waist high Pipe. They were just right. going to run out of the waiting period and run it like they did when Kanoa was in the finals last year. Wasn't it basically like shoulder high by the end?
Yeah.
It was so small. And when Pipeline is that small, it's just a bummer to watch. And I was thinking better. I'd way rather watch guys going over the falls, you know, in unruly, in, you know, God's cauldron than watching Kanoa in shoulder high pipe.
I agree. And I think, to be honest, that the WSL agrees.
Yeah.
Like, from what I've assessed in hindsight, I feel like the WSL wants what you and I want, but they don't have a magic ball or crystal ball to look into the future.
Sure.
They're just looking at the conditions going, well, the forecast suggests that we might get 8 to 10 foot backdoor.
Yep.
So let's go for that.
Yep, exactly. And they made the right call, clearly.
Yeah, and they generally do, which is kind of shocking.
It's true. It's true. Every time I want to kick Karen Perro right under the bus,
yeah,
I think, oh, more times than not, I've thought, what is this amateur doing? Why are they calling it now, or why aren't they, you know, letting it run or whatever? But 9 times out of 10, maybe not that much, but he's right.
In generally. Hindsight? Yeah. So you shame him in the moment, but in hindsight, in do moment. You ever congratulate him?
I will today.
Let's take this opportunity.
Karen Perreault, great job.
Fantastic job.
It was
and a, that it was a tough one to call.
Masterfully called.
I would agree. Since it's the end of the year, this is our last show of the year. We'll use this opportunity to reflect on things like this yep. and pat people on the back yep. for a job well done.
Yep,
Karen fantastic job. Can we talk about Gabriel's blocking techniques?
Let's do it.
There's a lot to break down here. The WSL instituted a new rule after the Tahiti event because Gabriel was blocking Chloe Andino. And there was another heat in that event that he did too. And I found, or the WSL had drones for that event. And so I found that footage on their website and put it on Instagram. And it made, and this was again months ago, but it made it super clear that Gabriel was basically paddling in. Gabe had priority. He was paddling in front of and blocking Chloe Andino whenever Chloe Andino made a move for a wave, not with the intention of catching the wave.
Just being in the way.
Simply to get in the way of Chloe.
Well, see, and here's the thing, too, is they were Richie Porta. They love to roll Richie Porta out anytime they're feeling the heat, I think. Like, mm-hmm. ooh, this was a controversial call. Let's get Richie Porta, which is a nice move, right? To have mm-hmm. the head judge right there. His explanation for what happened to me was absolutely asinine because
in Tahiti or in pipe?
In pipe.
Okay.
I thought it was asinine because he claimed that the guy with priority has priority and he gets to have, you know, first sniff at anything, right?
Yeah.
It was very clear, obviously, that Gabriel wasn't sniffing at those waves. Also, a wave like pipe, it's not like trestles, right? Where you can drop in super, super late or whatever. Like
right.
if you're going to go on something, you gotta pull the trigger. Like totally. You can't dilly-dally. And so with Gabriel paddling around right there, there's no way that Flores could have pulled the trigger on anything.
Right.
He would have either gone, just sent himself over the falls or got an interference. There was absolutely nothing to do. Like there was no other thing that was happening there except for Gabriel blocking Jeremy. And I don't know why the WSL explanation or Richie Porta's explanation fell so far short of what was actually happening that to me it was aggravating.
I completely agree. And I think what you're talking about was in round four. So it was a non-elimination heat. And Jeremy's mistake was sitting without priority, sitting outside of Gabriel.
Sure. But
so whenever a wave popped up, you're right. You can't paddle for it and then back off. So Jeremy knew it was a scoring wave and that Gabriel was inside of him. So he's like, Gabe's going to go on this. So he kind of makes a motion. Gabriel just turns around, doesn't paddle, and therefore loses priority. And there was three waves in a row where Gabriel did that. So the waves went unridden.
And they were the best waves. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows how they, but they appeared to be some of the best waves of the entire day.
But what happened is I agree with you. And then Gabe got a wave. Jeremy got another wave and actually won that heat. And so it was a little bit of retribution. Like it was karmic retribution.
Sure. Well, then he beat him again too.
So that's the other thing. Yeah. So in that heat though, what I thought was, all right, Gabe basically used the rules to his advantage and beat Jeremy technically, or he actually didn't. He ended up losing because Jeremy won him with a wave score. But what I thought was, or what I noticed was when Jeremy got that score, he paddled back out and then set in the exact same position that he did previously. And I thought to myself, Jeremy, did you not learn anything? You should sit now inside. Jeremy had priority. You should sit inside of Gabriel and do exactly to him what he did to you.
Like, I wonder though, I mean, at a wave like Pipe, like, I wonder if you're Jeremy, you want to be, I mean, talking to Jamie O'Brien about this, right? I always ask Jamie, how do you know where to sit? And Jamie said, I would get something in my mind before paddling out, and I want to be on that coral head, right? And he said he would paddle out, and he would, doesn't matter if somebody else is there, he would sit on that coral head where, you know, it was just where he wanted to be that day, right? Where I wonder if, I think Jeremy is a lot better pipe surfer than, and surfs pipe a lot more, I think, than Gabriel. And I wonder if he has almost that mentality too. Like, he wants to be there, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter what Gabriel's doing, right?
I think you're right. That probably is what it is.
But Gabriel, you know, and Gabriel was, I think, obviously surfed tactically, but I think what he did was against the rules. Like, it was definitely against the spirit of the rules.
So that comes into question. When we talk about what's right or wrong, there's what's right and wrong technically from a rule standpoint, which isn't actually that objective, yep. because he's now bending beyond the rules. Then there's what's right ethically.
Sure.
And then I think there's also a third one, which is what's right from kind of a global perspective,
yeah.
of what kind of progresses this sport forward, honors the sport, that sort of thing. So I'm going to kind of break it down. Well, Gabe actually blocked Kelly as well. Yep. I guess it would have been round five.
Yep.
After he lost to Jeremy Flores in round four, he went into round five and then surfed against Kelly. And this was the most egregious one that everybody's talking about, which is, Kelly made, first of all, an insane drop into the pit.
Yep.
Gabriel was actually sitting. Gabriel already had Kelly comboed. Gabriel was sitting down the line. And this is an important distinction for me, which is Gabriel wasn't even sitting in a position to get barreled on the wave. Gabriel was sitting on the exit of the wave.
With knowing that if Kelly got anything,
he's just going to use a blocking.
Yep. He can knock it right out.
So Kelly drops in, gets shacked, and Gabe drops in straight onto the exit and then actually kind of angles at Kelly, which to me looks like he's hoping that Kelly's going to make contact with him. He's not going to straight bull rush him, but he is going to go straight because Kelly's kind of getting chandeliered by the section and probably won't be able to navigate away from Gabriel. He'll just try to survive the wave. And of course, Kelly is miraculous enough to where he actually successfully surfed the barrel and avoided Gabriel. And an interference was not called, but Kelly did get a score for the wave. The score was not enough to get him out of the combo situation. But the question is just, was that a legal technique for Gabriel? The judges said, yes, it was legal, but we're still going to give Kelly the score. The question now is, was it ethically
the right thing to do? I think, of course, you know, people reposted after that. Some Brazilian reposted. Remember when Kelly did the same thing to Joel Parkinson on the Gold Coast at Snapper? Joel's has, you know, an epic barrel running down the line. Kelly shoulder hops him straight in, which is funny, I think. You know, I don't think the way Kelly, after that, threw double shakas to the beach with his tongue out, I don't think Kelly thought, like, oh, you know, this dick. I think Kelly thought, that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
That's what you do in that situation. But the WSL just needs to make sure that that's not what you do, right? If you're dropping in to wreck somebody, if you have priority and you're going to paddle for a wave and actually surf it, then great, right?
Yeah.
But if you're using priority to take somebody else's wave out, to me, then that there's a problem with the rule.
Totally.
And even the explanation though of Gabriel being right there, or as far as the rule book goes, to me it was really dubious because you can't do that. You can't just sit somewhere to drop in on somebody, right?
Correct.
And I have no idea how they split those hairs. And Richie Porta again, I think, tried to say something at that point, which didn't make any sense.
I agree. And I think that the rule that they instituted in Tahiti was supposed to prevent this exact thing from happening.
Yeah.
It's supposed to prevent blocking for the sake of blocking. So I think that you're right. That distinction with Kelly and Parco 2013 event on the Gold Coast, Kelly was using that wave to get a score. He also dropped in down, like, I don't think Kelly was sitting in that position to block Parco. Yeah. He was either paddling out from a previous wave or he was sitting in that position thinking this is the right part of the sandbar to where I'm going to get the best barrel. And there was a far enough distance between the two of them that there was no threat of physical harm.
Yeah.
Whereas Gabriel's...
He dropped right in on Kelly's head.
There was a safety concern there. And it's pipeline, which is different than Snapper. And like I said, there was, he was dropping in on the exit of the wave, like the exit of the doggy door portion of the barrel, not a portion where he could have surfed the wave, and he already had Kelly comboed.
Yeah.
So there, it's a completely different scenario. So I'll ask you straight out, does it matter that he had Kelly comboed when applying that tactic?
No.
I agree.
Because Kelly, you know, Kelly, say if Kelly could have finished that wave properly, that wave would have probably been a good mid eight, how mm-hmm. they were scoring at that point, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it maybe would have even been a nine.
If and he would have been out of combo.
Yeah, it would have been out of combo, and then it's all, yeah.
Right. So the fact that Kelly's combo doesn't matter.
No.
Does it matter that he didn't try to surf the wave and he just went straight?
To me, yes.
I agree.
That, because, and entertainment-wise, like, you need, I mean, I think the WSL should put the most entertaining product they can on the table, and having guys drop in and go straight is not entertaining.
I completely agree. I think that's a much better point. Like, when you're looking at it from that global perspective, what elevates and progresses the sport? And this, I think, restricts it. I think this now is going to require a new rule.
Yep.
And the rule is going to make it harder for people to actually, like, you know, creatively express themselves. It's bad globally.
I mean, they should. What the WSL should really do, I think, if I was head of WSL right now, if I was dear Sophie Goldschmidt, I would go into a room with everybody and say, okay, there's surfing tactically shouldn't be a part of professional surfing.
Right.
Let's take, how can we take basically, you know, of course you still need priority kind of thing, but aside from that, how can we take away any tactical surfing and just have it be, you have to go out there and not even, there's not even enough tactical things in the rule book to even think about.
No.
So you just go out and you're only ever thinking about how to surf, you know, as good as you possibly can.
And that's the absolute truth. Gabriel is using tact. He's not relying on his surfing.
No.
His surfing ability
is good enough to do anything.
Totally. It'll allow him to win the world titles.
Yep.
And what we want to see in that heat is for Kelly to get out of combo situation, yep, with that 8-5 on that wave, and Gabriel be forced to better his nines. Like, those are the best heats we've ever seen in the history of surfing.
Precisely.
These tactical heats.
No.
Everybody says, like, oh, but it adds drama and it adds flair. And it's like, it does, but not more than when they're getting nines back to back.
Precisely. And there's the drama and flair of watching three perfect waves go unridden because somebody's sitting, exactly, on somebody else is silly.
You know when you're sitting in traffic and, like, stop and go gridlock on the freeway, and then the one a-hole uses the emergency lane to kind of blow past everybody, and it's like, cool, dude, you beat us on a technicality,
yeah,
and you got there faster than any of us, but if we all did what you did, it would be pure chaos.
Sure.
And nobody would get anywhere.
Yeah.
It would block, and then somebody actually will be, I don't know, giving birth in their car, needing to get to the hospital, and that lane will be blocked and they can't do it. I feel like that's what Gabriel's doing to us.
Yeah.
He's beating us on technicalities, but it's lowering the standard for everything else that's going to take place from this point on. You need to operate with a sense of decorum to kind of keep things on track and to keep traffic moving respectably for everybody.
Well, I mean, I totally agree. And if more people start surfing like Gabriel surfs his heats, then it's bad. I mean, then
that's what I'm saying.
It's really,
everybody ends up in the emergency lane. And then nothing gets.
Just think, I mean, it would really be, you'd ride like one wave and then just sit on somebody the entire time. Just sit and block and sit and paddle in front of and drop in on them when they surf.
So I feel that is exactly, Gabriel is lowering the overall bar.
Yep.
You know?
And for pure entertainment value, again, like, it was funny when he dropped, I mean, after, you know, everybody's okay and everything, it was kind of funny when he dropped in on Kelly, but it didn't. Kelly getting that score would have made that heat so much better.
Now, let me ask you this. Gabe is the villain. Would it have been different if this was 10 years ago or 2003, let's say, and it was Andy Irons who dropped in on Kelly in that same scenario? Obviously, Gabe's the villain now, so we all can point the finger and blame him. But Andy being in Hawaii on his home court advantage, would it make any difference?
I don't think so. Because
you don't think so?
I don't think so, because again, it's not like Andy's, you know, if Andy would drop in, say, on Kelly and then surf a wave amazingly, then that, sure, maybe that. But in this same scenario, the dropping in and going straight is just silly.
You think Andy would have been vilified for it?
I don't think he would have been vilified, but I don't think people would have been standing up and saying that was such a sick move when he dropped in on Kelly. I mean, I think it would just be forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think Andy wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Andy would have been scrapping to get priority position probably. Yeah,
totally. I mean, and Gabe, see, that's the thing. Again, Gabe thinking even to do that, to me, points to real problems with the system, not with Gabe. Like he's, yeah. I think Gabe is tactically, he knows he can use it, right? Because not every surfer goes out there and cares about tactics. But again, the, if that starts to be the trend that not only, you know, are you going to be good, but you're also going to be smart. Mm-hmm. I don't want smart surfing.
Right.
I just want, yeah, I want raw, brutal surfing.
So back to my ethical questions. Does it matter that it was Pipeline?
I think so. I mean, it doesn't matter.
As opposed to like
Snapper anywhere else. I mean, I think it's, you know, the danger level gets raised. Like where if, say, the wave would have landed on top of Kelly's head and Kelly would have rebroken his foot or something like that. And, you know, I think people would have blamed Gabriel. I don't think it would have been Gabriel's fault. It's still the... It's the WSL's, would have been the WSL's fault,
yeah.
I think. But yeah, I don't think it changes. I don't think that changes anything ethically.
Okay. WSL posted a photo in their stories of Kelly's foot after.
Saw that. All that black thing, and blue.
It is gnarly. Yeah, it's
it was really
so
black
gnarly.
And blue. It was gross.
Yeah, and he doesn't complain about it that much.
And he didn't, like usually old Kelly, I think, would have used it as kind of a funny, haha, look at how good I did, even with a broken foot. But yeah. I didn't even hear him mention it at all.
No.
In any post he had interview, any time. Like there was no reference.
I agree. Yeah, it's shocking. Now, another question ethically, does it matter that it appears as though Gabe tried to cause an interference? Like Gabe, to me, it looked like angled towards Kelly, hoping Kelly would make contact and thereby receive an interference. Does that matter?
I think so. I mean, that to me is the part where, again, I lay all blame at the feet of the head judge, where it was very, Gabriel's intentions, I thought, from the webcast were clear. He was trying to block Kelly's wave, which as far as I understood the rule book was illegal, and I have no idea. And Richie Porta, so the way Richie Porta talked about it, it seemed like there's two rules, right? There is priority and there's blocking. And it seems in Porta's explanation, the priority rule always trumps the blocking call, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, duh. I mean, that's what priority is. So right. I didn't understand it at all. Like if then take away the blocking rules and just have everybody blocking or... I mean, I think the blocking rule should forevermore trump the priority rule. If you're just surfing like an asshole, you get dinged. You get your
this
score
is,
after whatever it is.
This, though, is an additional distinction. This was beyond blocking. This was actually angling to try to make Kelly make contact.
Totally.
So does that now matter?
I mean, I think once he dropped in, then he had already committed what, in my mind, is the grave sin. Once Gabe turned and paddled for a wave that he had no hope of doing anything on, that Kelly had every hope of possibly doing something amazing on, then whatever Gabe did after that, I mean, he could have punched Kelly, and to me, it would have been the same.
To me, it's not. To me, this is an important distinction. Gabe could have surfed away from Kelly and still caused the exact same effect, but he didn't. He was hoping Kelly would get an interference on that wave, and so he presumably angled to make Kelly make contact with him. I think this is one step away from him plowing straight into Kelly, you know, and even this is one step too far where it's like, dude, this is the exact opposite of what we want to happen. And this is kind of, it becomes a contact sport at that point.
Which I would love if surfing was a contact sport, if they did away with priority and everything altogether and you could drop in and swing, like push people off waves and stuff. That would be a lot of fun.
I'm into that too, but now that's an entirely different direction.
That's true. That's true. But back, okay, real quick back here. Do you think how, I know that Gabriel is, I think, you know, Instagram wise or whatever, is like one of the most popular surfers in the world, right?
Totally.
Do you think that all of Brazil was cheering that move or the way he surfs? Do you think, like, it's hard for me to get a gauge of what honest Brazilians actually think of it on, you know, message boards, like on Beach Grits, for example, under the headline, God Hates Gab, there was a couple Brazilians in there getting real mad, right? Which I get, like, but do Brazilians support him in general, or do you think he would be more popular if he stopped doing things like that? Like, in other words, shorter, is Gabriel hurting himself by doing the things he does? Would he be more popular, you know, and therefore sell more board shorts or whatever, more Rip Curl product, therefore get more money, if he wasn't who he is?
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to that question.
A lot of layers.
I don't know the answer to it. I think that part of the joy is him being the villain.
Sure.
I don't think that he's recognized and embraced the fact that he's a villain. I think some villains play it up. Like John McEnroe or whatever will say just sensational things just because he knows that's what is expected of him.
Sure.
And he's down with embracing it. I think you're that way to a certain degree with your kind of identity as a writer and with Beach Grit and that sort of thing. And it makes you impervious to the negative feedback.
Sure.
You know, nothing sticks to you because you embrace it. I think things stick to Gabriel.
See, this is the thing. As I was watching it, I was funny that you bring that up because I was sort of rooting for Gabriel to win the whole thing,
yeah.
If I'm going to be quite honest with you. Like, yeah. To take John out just for this villainous narrative. Like, right. I really like that narrative, right? And I agree with you that I don't know that Gabriel embraces it. If he did embrace it and was doing all that stuff that he's doing, I would enjoy it more, I think. But again, it just wouldn't be, it's not as enjoyable surfing-wise to watch. But yeah. I would really call on Gabriel. Gabriel, I know you listen. embrace your villain. Embrace the dark side.
So I went through some of that same exact headspace that you went through where I found myself, I've never been a Gabriel fan.
Yeah.
I found myself in this event becoming a Gabriel fan, yep. And rooting for him because I liked an element of his tactical kind of mindset. And then I found myself hating him, you know, and rooting for whoever. Jeremy to beat him on that wave with sheer surfing rather than technicality. And then I found myself hating Gabriel again. And in the end, I was like, I loved that I went through that emotional roller coaster.
Sure.
That made surfing super fun for me in a way that I haven't had in a very long time.
Like Gabriel, I think Gabriel, I mean, surfing, professional surfing needs Gabriel Medina more than John Florence at this moment in time. Because if it was just John again, second world title, third world title next year, it's Pipe next year, right?
Yeah.
So they get to pop bubs once more at Pipe. The Gabriel Medina narrative, though, is, I think, a more compelling narrative. And, you know, as rude as it is, I was thinking how fun-ish would it be to watch Gabriel win and just the pall of depression that would come onto the North Shore. That John, like, stealing it from John, there would have been, 15 cheering Brazilians and everybody else would have just been hung dog and bummed.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that didn't happen, right? It was fun to watch John celebrate and all that. But without the real drama of this bad guy could come in and steal it in John's backyard.
But I do wonder, are we forcing him to be the villain? Are we the ones crafting the narrative that he's the villain? Because he's soft-pedaling it.
Like, yeah, completely. He doesn't think he's a villain. I think, I mean, again, the God hates Gab thing. The reason that we put that on Beach Grit is because Gabriel said, and I think the day before... heat that God is on his side, right?
Where
when he won a heat, right. He said, God is on my side, blah, 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 blah. Which is, a funny thing to say, but I really truly think that Gabriel Medina is trying to be a good Christian probably and doing his best and working hard and trying to, do the best he can within the rule book and whatever. Like, I think he doesn't think he's a villain. He should think he's a villain though.
I imagine if he got up on the podium and was just like, F all you guys.
Yeah.
F Jeremy Flores for being bummed that I beat him on a technicality.
Yep.
That's what surfing is. Yep. There's rules for a reason. I'm playing. That would be rad.
No, I know.
That would be rad. And then even like, F you, everybody on the North Shore supporting John.
Yeah.
Screw you too. Yep. You know, like that would be so rad.
Completely.
And I would hate him and completely root against him while knowing this is awesome.
I mean, it's when surfing becomes a little more like MMA or something, right? Or WWE.
But MMA is fine too because you got Conor McGregor.
Sure, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They have people and you have the... I mean, even in crappy, whatever bouts that nobody knows anybody, the two guys still at weigh-in get in each other's face and yell, right?
Completely.
Where nobody in surfing is yelling. And I guess that's fine, but if they want to make it more entertaining... Yeah, Gabriel, which I guess he doesn't have to embrace it. He just is now. And especially the way he surfed yesterday added, more stamps in his bad guy passport.
Yeah.
By, the way he blocked Jeremy and the way he dropped in on Kelly.
Here's my concern for Gabriel. I've brought this up before and people disagreed with me in the post kind of commentary. but I'm going to stand by it. I think Gabriel really needs to start thinking about legacy at this point. And how do you want to be remembered, Gabriel? Do you want to be remembered for your surfing or for your tactician ability? And what I didn't bring up last time is anytime anybody talks about Damian Hardman,
yeah,
nobody talks about his surfing ability.
Yep.
So my point is, I think everybody at this level, certainly if you've won a world title, we know that you're a great surfer. That's a given. But how do you distinguish yourself between the other world champions? Well, Damian Hardman is distinguished by his technical prowess. Nobody ever talks about a wave that he surfed.
Yep.
There's not one Tom Carroll snap moment for Damian Hardman. So Gabriel, he's getting to the point where it's like, you're all great surfers. Additionally, I feel like the Brazilian storm, quote unquote, has actually diminished Gabriel's rising star status because Italo and Felipe are doing equally crazy airs.
Yeah.
So like he's indistinguishable. He's crazier, not
indistinguishable, I would say. I mean,
totally. Yeah, yeah. They've actually gotten better than his. He's gotten to the point where he was the shining star for a minute at the beginning of it, the first phase of it, but now it's all kind of equalized and it's harder to distinguish him in that round one heat with Miguel Pupo, where Miguel Pupo got the craziest wave of that. He's a Brazilian goofy footer and he outshined Gabriel. Then who's doing the craziest airs of the event? Oh, actually Italo is. If those guys weren't on tour, Gabriel would stand out as this superstar of a region in the way that Jordy Smith does with South Africa or whatever, or Griffin Colapinto is going to do for California. You know, he's our only Californian, or him and Chloe. So I think that those guys have actually kind of, I don't know, blurred the lines of Gabe's superstar status. And then they're all great surfers, so he gets lumped into that category. And now his only defining characteristic is his tactician status.
Dropping in on people.
So, Gabe, what do you want to do for your legacy?
Yeah, Gabe.
It might be an important thing. If you can't stand out from your surfing prowess and winning the most world titles, I don't know, in history or whatever, your legacy could be being the black-hatted villain.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Which would be awesome, right?
If we need it.
If he embraced it. I would love for... I mean, how old is Gabriel?
I can look it up while we're talking.
Yeah. If he's similar in age to John, I'm thinking, right?
Early 20s, for sure.
Yeah. And so he and John could theoretically have this... I mean, because I feel that Andy Irons... Obviously, Kelly was a lot older than Andy. But... And they were both older kind of when that rivalry hit on.
Mm-hmm.
Where now we've had... Is this the third year of a... Gabriel kind of John rivalry?
It's the fifth.
fifth year of a
game. I mean, they weren't going for world titles.
Sure, but like a specific rivalry, right? At this point, I think it's a third year where you could actually call it a rivalry, which is amazing. They're both still so young. Like, we could have this John versus Gabriel thing stretch out for a long time, which would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think, as a fan, as a surf fan.
But I agree, except there's way too much talent now in that upper echelon that I don't think it'll be a two-horse race.
Yeah, you don't think so? You think next year it's going to be coming down to pipe and it's going to be someone other than John and Gabriel?
It will be them in addition to three other people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, by the way, Gabriel's birthday is in 3 days.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah. December 22nd, 93 is when he was born, so he'll be 24.
Okay. And John, I think, is got to be right around there.
Same,
right?
Similar, for sure.
Yeah.
Phenomenal event. I mean,
really fun to
watch. So much fun to watch.
Yeah, really fun to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, bravo. But the WSL really should. It's incumbent upon them, I think, in this offseason to, if they can, change the rules. I don't know how they do that, but to really knock that stupid stuff off. Like, it's in their hands to change it.
They're forced to now.
And I think you just shouldn't be able to block for blocking's sake. If you have priority and you're going to take off on a wave and surf it, you at least have to make the effort of surfing it.
Yeah.
And if you're in the bad spot or whatever, then you get dinged anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the crazy thing about surfing, right? I think intention is not very hard to discern. Like, you know what any surfer is intending to do, I think, by looking at them. It's not like, I just think it's obvious. I think intention is very clear when it comes to surfing.
I agree. We shouldn't overlook, by the way, the excitement of the final itself.
It was good.
Jeremy Flores, John Florence. Jeremy needed an 8-2-7 and got to his feet with 16 seconds left on the clock and gets an 8-3-3, winning over Florence by 0.7 points.
Jeremy deserved it, I thought.
I agree.
I mean,
I loved it.
I think there were some really wacky scores throughout the day,
especially
Gabriel's 9. That one was absolutely bizarre.
I don't remember it.
It was, he got an 8. It was like some inside running, I think.
A back door?
It was a back door barrel. Though he got the 8 for a runner and then a bigger one at back door again. But his board was never even fully behind the wave or behind the lip. And he got a 9.07, I think, which was, totally bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't want to kick the judges anymore, but the judges, they fucking suck.
I think there was also an earlier heat where it might have been round 3 or something. John got a gift over Ethan Ewing.
Yep, yep.
Ethan needed a score at the end, and it looked to me like he got it by half a point.
For sure.
And then they gifted it to John. But then Gabriel was in a similar situation against, I forget who, but he got a over Josh Kerr.
Yep.
And he kind of got the gift as well.
See, I don't know how they're going to, it's the one, not to be negative after all this good positive talk, but the judging is a real genuine problem. Yeah. Like, I think when you have so many people at home, like, yelling and thinking, what is that? Then you've made a mistake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think to say, no, we're the experts, and 90% of the people who are saying that was a bad score are wrong because we're the experts, right? Like, when you have that much, and it happens time and time again, I think, where they've got to figure it out. I don't know if they should tear the house down and figure out how to be able to rescore stuff. So there's not so much, I mean, just the amount of subjectivity, and so there's 100% subjectivity, right? There's no baseline anything.
No.
If they want to think, this wave is an 8 and that wave is a 6, like, half of them, you look at them, like a couple of those inside running tubes, they were giving some guys 5s and some guys 9 on, were in the tube for the same amount of time. The wave was the exact same big, size. and the heats were, it's the exact same size, and the heats were similar. And like, if you have a 4 to 5 point fluctuation, something is really off in your judging.
I've long advocated for the fact that, or for the idea that the judges should be in a soundproof booth and not know the scores needed.
Yeah.
So in that example with Ethan Ewing, they knew Ethan needed whatever, a 5.53 or whatever. And if they gave it to him, John, it would threaten John's title race.
Yep.
And how could that not influence your scoring of it? And you're looking at the wave and you're like, should he win it? Should he not win it? If he needs a 5-3 or 5-5-3 to win it, I'll give him a 5.47. You know, like, how could you not be influenced by that? Especially when all of those judges are fans of surfing, of course, and you know they're fans of John John more likely than not. Or regardless, they have a favorite in a heat. Sure. They have a surfer that they identify with that might be from their home country that surfs like they do or whatever.
Yeah.
How could that not influence your judging? But the soundproofing thing, I think if they just wrote down their score for each wave and not even know what score gets, get, like obviously because it's averaged, so they only write down their score, not knowing what the average score that gets applied to that wave is, and go through the heat just writing down their own version of a score, not knowing the averages, not knowing what is needed, not even knowing who's winning the heat, who's losing the heat, I think that would make it a little bit more objective.
I think, I mean, why do the judges have to be there? That's what I wonder.
Like, on the premises?
Sure.
That's a good question.
They should, I don't know why the judges, it would be better if they sat in their Santa Monica office, all in different offices, right?
With getting the same viewing experience that you and I are getting.
Exactly. I mean, and, you know, because I don't think that they're peeking out. I mean, I know they have a view, obviously, but I would imagine most of the scoring comes from them watching replays, right?
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I think they probably watch the wave and have an idea in mind of what that wave is and then watch the replay and adjust it slightly up or down.
Sure.
But still, the WSL could make a feed of, you know, a wide angle for them and then the close-up ones. I just don't know why they have to be there.
I've also made the argument, I don't know why they have to judge it in real time.
Yeah.
Like, if they have the ability to do that, why not? You can make an initial assessment in real time, and then after the 30 minutes is up, because that's the other thing, is they always go, well, the we're setting a scale by the first wave that gets surfed, not knowing what's going to happen for the rest of the heat. Well, that was always in place because there wasn't video review when that got instituted. Well, now we have video review. So why do it that way? Why not just watch all 30 minutes and then go, okay, these were John John's best two waves. These were Ethan's two waves.
And then look at them directly.
Look at them, review them. How do they size up?
I totally agree. I've thought this for a while, that they should surf the heat, and then after the heat, you know, within 5 minutes or whatever, the score comes out. And based on, you just surf the best you can. And that way, I think, also for the surfers, you would just be out trying to surf as good as you could, not surfing for a score.
Exactly. Because
you wouldn't know what your score was. It would be more entertaining for sure.
Gabriel hears that Italo got a big score on an air, well, Gabe's not looking for barrels anymore. He's now looking for airs.
Exactly.
Whereas in that scenario, you're right. You're just surfing to the best of your ability.
Yep.
And also a bit more creatively.
Yeah, I would think so.
So that scenario would definitely make it a less enjoyable viewing experience from the standpoint of like the drama that's involved with the ticking time clock and all that.
I mean, I think,
but it could make it a more enjoyable experience because we're watching better surfing.
I think it could. And I think with the thing would be also there, I think it would be really incumbent upon the announcers or the commentators to have really good stuff to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. Like really go back and forth. Ooh, is that wave better than, you know, let's show them, you know, back to back and let's really see. Like them trying to suss it out in the booth would be fun. Like, again, while can I keep being negative here, David?
Yeah.
The commentators are god awful, unlistenable, all of them. Did you like them? If I have to hear one more time that Barton Lynch is the 88 world champion, they're like, all of them are broken records explaining. Somebody on Beach Grit wrote a story, can't remember who, which was, we're not retarded, you know, to the judges. Did we talk about that last time?
We did.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And it's, this one was, this pipeline contest was so that, right? They're somehow the WSL tells the commentators, hey, pretend you're talking to somebody who has no idea what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody watching the webcast, not everybody, 90% of the people watching the webcast know what's happening, right? You don't need to explain the overlapping heats scenario 15 times. Like, they just do it. It's like in their heads, and they just can't get it out of their heads of, okay, we have to, it's time again to explain priority. It's time again to explain, you know, the barrel dynamics, like getting covered up by the wave actually means, et cetera, et cetera. Where, I mean, I don't know who they have no idea who's watching this stuff, it seems, or they just think it's,
or they're just, get it. Like you said, there's not enough pre-produced topics that they just rely back on that to fill the dead air.
I feel bad, but at the end of it, I like Joe Turpel's voice had, you know, watching a full 2 days of it, basically, Joe Turpel's voice, if I never have to hear Joe Turpel again, it'll be too soon. It's just the like such shallow mumbling, or he doesn't mumble, he speaks clearly and well, but just the no information ever between him and Potts. It's the most vacuous time. Like nothing gets said. Right. Absolutely nothing gets said.
And with very little enthusiasm as well. Like Joe Turpel could see the gnarliest thing. Well, we've talked about the shark attack.
Sure.
And he's just like,
jumping on the ski and resetting.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think that as the WSL continues, I think, to evaluate their product, I think the rules are a major thing. The judging is a major thing. And the most major thing, I honestly think, is the commentator team. Mm. Like, I think they should tear it down and build it back up. I think they know now who's functional. You know, I think Ronnie does a totally fine job as a straight man. Turpel, I just, God bless him, I just think is too dumb. I think that he doesn't have enough critical thinking skill to, you know, say anything ever interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just going to be bland recap, and maybe they could have a feed, a whole separate feed. Why not? This is the future, right? A separate feed for, hey, if you've never watched professional surfing before, we have a feed for you. And mm-hmm. that's Joe Turpel and Potts saying nothing, you know, for 30 minutes at a time. But bringing any kind of, I mean, I wrote it about, you know, did you see the gambling thing on Beach Creek yesterday? Yeah. So, you know, Strider and Kaipo had theoretically made a bet that Kelly knew about. Kaipo totally tried to backpedal from it, which was awesome, because betting beers on the outcome of the events is essentially why Duma and Snake were fired.
Right. So Kelly brought it up to Kaipo in the post-heat interview.
Yep.
I looked for the video after you posted that, and I couldn't find it.
I have a video, but it's off somebody's TV, and I didn't want to post it because it would give the person away. But yeah, I'll show it to you afterwards.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
Well, we've solved the judging problem for him. Put him in a soundproof booth off-site and scored after the
after the 30 minutes. Yeah.
And then pitched to Chaz and I sitting in the Santa Monica offices drinking margaritas, and we'll give you guys the recap. The 90-second, 2-minute long recap.
How good would it be?
Pitch to us in the studio.
Yep.
Be like, Gabriel's such an asshole.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that J-Flo called him out on the podium afterwards.
So good.
Good on J-Flo. Yep. Like, keep fighting the good fight, J-Flo. You know?
That's
what we should be doing.
Yeah. And the judging. I don't know how you solve that. Oh, yeah.
We solved it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Judging is done. Yeah. Yep.
All right. So, qualify. Oh, by the way, I think this final, in all the history of all of surfing, since the beginning of competitive surfing, this final had two finalists with the most similar names.
Yeah, Jeremy Flores, John Florence.
Florence and Flores.
Yeah. It's really hard.
Interesting, right?
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
I found myself, I was talking about the final with somebody last night, and I was like, Florence Flores. And I realized, whoa, is Flores a Spanish version of the Florence? Italian? Is Florence Italian and Flores the Spanish?
Like, but except, it's a good question. Florence is Firenze, right? In Italy.
Yeah, and I think Flores might be flower.
Yeah, Flores is flowers.
Okay.
Jeremy Flowers. Jeremy Flowers is a good name. He should go by Jeremy Flowers.
Yeah.
Ooh,
I like it.
I'm going to start calling him Jeremy Flowers.
But weird, right?
Yeah,
Florence
totally.
Flores. And how come nobody mentioned that?
And it's J-Flo and JJ-Flo, too.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, they have the same even...
That's right.
Nickname.
There's also the J there. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder what their middle names are.
Yeah. We'll have to get to that.
Qualified for 2018. Griffin Colapinto, Jesse Mendez, Wade Carmichael, Tomas Hermes, Yago Dora, William Cardoso, Michael Rodriguez, and Keanu Asing. And it looks like Patrick Gadowskis got in because of some double qualifiers.
I saw that.
That's official then?
I think so. Or the list that I was sent.
Okay.
Pat Gudang was on there. So I think it seemed official, though.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You said previously Tomas Hermes is your new...
He's my new favorite.
Why?
Just because his name is Hermes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I feel he's a
fan. I didn't realize
that. And he looks like a fancy man. So...
Yeah.
That's fine.
Okay. Yago Dora, is it unfortunate that his name is Dora? Like, can there be two important Doras in surfing?
So. I mean, the fact that his first name is Yago, he's got Yago Dora together is an epic name. And so I think that... I never even think of Mickey Dora when I think of Iago Dora, just because Iago Dora, I never call him Dora, right? He's Iago right. Dora.
He averted disaster there.
By having an epic first name.
Good point.
Yeah.
See, because I always thought like there can never be another Kelly in surfing, or if there is, you're just going to kind of, there's no way you can live up to the original Kelly.
The bummer is all the people who named their son Taj after Taj Burrow, because one of those kids is going to eventually make, there's going to be another Taj that comes up into pro surfing, and then that kid is going to have to, that'll be embarrassing for that kid.
He'll never be able to live, he'll always be in the shadow.
Unless he wins a title.
He won't. I don't think he'll be allowed to, because he'll always be in the shadow. Like, how do you step out of the shadow? Yeah. It really puts a limitation on your own ability, trying to always fight that, you know, throughout your life. So don't name your kid Kelly. Honestly, I feel bad for Dane Gadowskis for this exact reason. He's fighting Dane Reynolds' shadow and the Gadowskis shadow. Yeah. Like he's
gotten two shadows.
Yeah, he's just screwed.
Yeah.
And so Dora, I was always concerned about him, but you're right. Iago's strong enough to stand alone.
And because you never call him Dora. It's always Iago Dora.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. Okay. How do you feel about this idea of Keanu Asing and Patrick Gadowskis re-qualifying after legitimately losing their spots on tour?
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
See, it's like I was going to say, when I saw the list, the first thing that, of the official, these are people who qualified who are in, it feels like the Workman's Surf League. Like everybody, exactly. It's real workmanlike. Like it's the guys who go and on the QS and can cut, and those guys will fall off. And there's going to be no surprises. I mean, Patrick Gadowskis, I think, surfs really well. And I think he could surprise everybody by getting up to the middle. But there's no stars.
Right.
In that list, there's no.
Iago could be a star.
Iago is the only one, I think, coming in that could be a star.
You don't think Griff? Griff Colapinto?
Oh, I'm sorry. Griffin, yeah. Griffin, I guess, could be. Yeah, for sure, Griffin. Wade Carmichael, no. I know you like him. Yeah. But Wade Carmichael is going to be a workman, put workman-like equal fifths, you know, when he's lucky.
So I think it's important for me to distinguish between the workman thing versus the guy who fell off tour 4 years ago and then worked their way back up to it. So, which, by the way, William Cardoso is in that camp too. He was on tour for a year.
I know.
So I'm going to kind of classify Wade Carmichael as separate than those guys. I think it's Wade's turn. I love Patrick Gadowskis surfing. And like whenever he's in an event, I'm excited to watch him. But I agree with you. It's not super exciting.
No.
It's not going to revolutionize our sport in the way that, I don't know, like you said, Griff has the potential to.
And Keanu was saying too. I mean, the kid won a stinking, what did he win?
Margaret's? France.
France. He won France. You know, obviously, I don't doubt his surfing ability, but I've already seen it. I've seen the show once. And I don't want to go, I did not want to get another ticket to that movie.
That's the best way to put it. I've already seen it.
Yeah. There's going to be no surprises. Yeah. No, like, Tomas Hermé is my new favorite surfer. He may surprise everyone, right?
He could.
He might be the rookie of the year.
He won't, but he could.
I'm hoping. Tomas, I'm cheering for you.
My question mark with Griff is like, he has undeniable talent, right? Sure. And the criticism I've given in the past is maybe it's too much too soon. Like he's been kind of, his path has been paved and he's well paid, blah, blah, blah. But my real question mark for him is, he looks like a little kid. Yeah. When they interviewed him, he won the Rookie of the Year, rookie of the Triple Crown, yep. Vans Triple Crown rookie.
I thought he won the Triple Crown.
Oh, is that what it was?
He did. He won the Triple Crown.
My
mistake. Yeah. That's good. It's good that he also won the Triple Crown rookie.
Congratulations, Griffin, on all your accomplishments this year. And I do like him and I love his surfing, but they go to interview him.
He's a kid.
It looks like a little kid. And it's like, dude, how is that going to hold up on tour? Like, is your sheer ability enough to get through? And based on Ethan Ewing and a lot of other examples that came, Chloe Andino, all these other examples that came before him, sheer ability isn't enough.
No.
So I'm really interested to watch. See, and exactly. I love his surfing.
Unlike the Patrick Gadowskis and Keanu saying, I think that the key there is really interested to watch.
Yeah.
Like.
Totally.
Yeah, I will be actively tuning out for Keanu Asing.
Totally. Time for lunch.
Yeah.
I like, there was one of my favorite, might have been a comment on Beach Grit years ago, or it might have been like a tweet, but it was like, Ace Buchan's up in the next heat, or as we like to call it in Australia, lunchtime.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
Solid.
Real good.
All right. Just a quick side note that's worth just acknowledging. Carissa Moore got married.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, congratulations to Carissa and her high school sweetheart, Luke.
What does Luke do?
I'm not sure.
Was Luke a teacher?
No idea. But they've been together for a long time, and like she's been documenting their long-term relationship on Instagram, so I was glad to see that. I always have the question mark where it's like, can you do, as Matt Warshaw said, multiple things successfully at the same time?
Yep.
Can you be a great spouse and married successfully and chase your world title? I know you can be a pro surfer and travel on tour successfully, but win a world title.
Sure.
Like that level of dedication. Can you do that successfully while managing family?
Sure. I mean, I reckon you can if Luke is like along for the ride and or holding it down at home or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the spouse in that case being supportive, like knowing what you're getting into and being supportive, as opposed to, I got my dreams too, baby.
Right.
Like, or if, you know, Luke can quietly do his dreams, you know, or yeah, I don't know. I think you can completely, but it depends on the spouse being flexible.
I still question it. Like if you just take statistics, like look at all the world title winners, what position were they in their life? And I feel like, again, you can get second, you can get fifth, but that level of dedication to the title, I feel like takes a real singular focus.
Tell you what though, I'm working on a movie right now called Trouble, the Lisa Anderson story. She was the most phenomenal by far, heads and shoulders above her female competition by far, never even like barely requalifying until she had a baby. And once she had a baby, that very next year she won her first title, first of three.
Excellent information.
So, yep. So it took her, and she talks about in the film, which everybody will see, beautiful tear-jerking moment where she talks about how it was Erica, her daughter, having Erica made her win, basically.
Amazing.
Like it cleaned out all the noise.
Right.
And she had this crazy focus on surfing when she had, because it was, you know, brief windows then, because she was taking care of a child.
Right.
And traveling around the world with this child, but that allowed her, you know, newborn baby. She literally won the title the year Erica was born.
Fantastic. Yep. I'm glad to know that.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And so I could see though with Carissa, like not that Carissa was ever a party animal or anything like that, how everything, you can kind of really focus in, you're married now, right? You have your husband, whether he travels with you or not on tour or to all the stops or not. I could see how you could be really, you know, focused in. I don't know though, maybe with the men who Kolohe's getting married, right?
Yeah.
See? And so Kolohe, I think this, you know, not that, again, I don't think Kolohe's a party guy, but having your wife, you know, maybe allows him to really knuckle down and focus in. You know, I'm married, I'm a family man now. It's really time to get to work.
Yeah, interesting.
Is Freestone on tour again? Did he make it or did
he
drop off?
I don't think he made it.
Because that's a bummer because he just had a kid. So that would be the Lisa Anderson principle. It would be interesting to watch with him if new father, got to be focused, got to be serious. Because Freestone's an incredibly talented surfer too who just fails on the competitive scene.
Has not lived up to the hype or to his ability. We can still see him play that scenario out on the QS.
Sure.
He might win the QS next year.
That's awesome.
As a result. I asked Dave Parmenter about his relationship with Lisa on air.
Yeah, what did he say?
Well, like, here's the deal. Quiet? Here's the deal. Parmenter, he's an interesting guy.
Sure.
And anytime I've ever published anything with him, the feedback online is real polarized.
Oh, really?
People are like, oh, that guy is so arrogant or so pretentious or whatever. And then other people are like, I love that guy. And he's super smart.
Yep.
And he has a lot of insight into board design and surf history and all that sort of stuff. So I've always ignored the negative commentary when I've spent time with him and just focused on, you know, the design related stuff. But I called him out on it. I was like, hey, dude, you got to know that the internet, half of them think that you're a curmudgeon is what it is, really. Sure. And so he didn't really love that question. And then I was like, well, what about people want to know about your relationship with Lisa Anderson? And, you know, they're making a documentary about her. Did anybody reach out to you to talk about it?
Hell no.
And he was like, nobody reached out to me. And I'm like, what are your thoughts on it? Do you have thoughts on your relationship with her? I read in the tabloids of that time, like that it was kind of tumultuous. He's like, I don't really talk about that stuff. I'm like, yeah, but people want to know. He's like, yeah, I don't talk about it.
Oops. Sorry, Dave.
He's like, oh, all right. Well,
it's going to be in a movie, Dave, your relationship with Lisa.
Her version is going to be in the movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, no, thankfully they filmed like they were addicted to filming. And so
I didn't know that.
It's their version. I mean, really. I mean, yeah. You know, she explains it, but you see it all like in real time. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm curious to see it. And like Dave has enough respect for like me, what I'm doing as the interviewer to where like he's cool. He doesn't mind that I asked him.
Sure.
But and also honestly, his deflection was a great response. Yeah. It was like, cool, dude. Don't answer.
Yeah. Don't. Well, you're going to see. Everybody's going to get to see Dave and Lisa's relationship.
Awesome.
It was super cute.
Do we have any timeline on when that will be released?
Soon. We're rounding the bend kind of on finishing it up right now. So it's
still in post-production though?
Oh, yeah. It's still in production.
Got it.
Yeah. It's not even in post yet.
So timeline on release date.
I don't know because it depends on if we're going to do the festival circuit or I gotta figure that out.
Will it be 2018?
Oh, definitely 2000. It'll be early 2018.
Oh,
at some point. I mean, there'll be a screener for like an industry screener thing at some point.
Okay.
Like in January or February.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Speaking of 2018, let's do a moment of reflection.
Let's do it.
Reflect on 2017, look into 2018, how we can improve the podcast, how we can improve Beach Grit, all that sort of stuff. What I would like to see from Beach Grit, this will give you a list of articles to do throughout the end of the year. Give me the top five articles of 2017 in terms of like the most views.
Okay.
I would love to see the most upvoted comments of the year.
That's a good one.
I would love to see the most searched terms of the year.
Okay.
Remember one year, I don't know, I don't think you did it at the end of the year, but it was just like mid-year. And the most searched thing was like John being gay or something.
Yeah.
Like the most Google searched thing that landed on your website,
I think it was. Yep, that gets you to Beach Grit. I just had one yesterday that was Rasta sex. R-A-S-T-A. Sex.
Rasta, what does that even mean?
I don't know if it was like Rastavich or Rastafarian.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I couldn't ask the person because it's just somebody landed there.
Googling amazing.
Rasta sex.
Amazing. Yeah. So let's get that. Let's get the most clicked banner out of the year, maybe. Yep. Will you have video in 2018?
We should.
I think you should.
You know what's happening in 2018? This is an exciting development. Yes. I don't know. It kind of was released yesterday. The information, but kind of buried, which 2018 is going to be see Beach Grit as the home, your home for surf betting. We partnered with Palmer Bets in Australia. So yeah, there's going to be a whole betting side to Beach Grit now.
Betting on strictly competitive surfing
competitive or surfing
death pool, when people will break up.
We should add that kind of stuff. We should add
More Beach Grit.
We'll talk to Palmer Betting about adding that kind of stuff in there.
I would love that sort of stuff.
Definitely. We'll do that too. But yeah, at least on the launch, like you'll be able to go to Beach Grit. And I think if you're in the United States, you're going to have to throw your whatever it is, your
IP
somewhere else or to Australia or whatever. But yeah, betting on surfing, real betting.
I'm excited about that. That is awesome.
It's good.
I think there's, I feel like there's times where I have wanted Beach Grit to be more like TMZ.
Yep.
Like, and there's times where you have been and then maybe you veered away from it intentionally or unintentionally. I don't know. But in terms of doing like death pool betting and stuff like that, I want you guys to report on who's banging who and like who's what, you know, whatever, who's broken up, like all that sponsor gossip, things like that. I would love for you guys to be my go-to source for that sort
of thing. We'll do a better job.
Is there a reason why you don't, or have you veered away from it intentionally?
It's funny. It doesn't get a lot of views, that kind of stuff. Like the real insidey surf industry banter stuff is, I think people are generally, I mean, you know, maybe we'll try it again, but in the past it's been our, you know, not well-read stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Then maybe
my
desire for it is unwarranted.
I think it's just really a small circle. Know all the pieces, you know, to have stuff like that be interesting.
Yeah.
Whereas I think most people, you know, you have to really be kind of a surf industry nerd to.
I don't know. So the reason I bring it up is actually that exact thing is I've gotten literally 4 direct messages in the last month or two with people asking what's up with Kalani Miller and Kelly Slater.
Mm.
And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what's up?
They go, oh, well, Kalani hasn't posted anything on Instagram since October 13th. And I'm like, First of all, how do you know that information? Like, you just realized that you hadn't seen a bikini shot of Kalani Miller, so you went and like creeped her Instagram account.
Yeah.
And then like, oh no, but also Kelly Slater hasn't posted anything with Kalani in that amount of time. And he's been to Florida and he's been to California. Now he's in Hawaii and I haven't seen Kalani in Hawaii. And I'm just like, dude, first of all, you're way too into this conspiracy theory. And then secondly, I'm super intrigued. So tell me more.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and I have no idea. And I actually heard one of the WSL commenters say that like Kelly was in the yard with, or
Kalani
was in the yard with Kelly at John's house yesterday. So it could have deflated the entire conspiracy theory. But there was a part of me that was intrigued. More importantly, I was shocked that four people individually
hit you up on the Kalani,
asked me for the Kelly insight.
Thing. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Well, yeah. You know, I would love to have a, if somebody wants out there wants to do that kind of stuff.
There you go.
Give me a call, because okay. I would love to have that on offer at Beach Grit. Maybe I'm just not the one to write it.
Well, I mean, so that's the thing, is there's too many different things to chase down to do for you and Derek to do it by yourselves. So it's prioritizing which ones are the most important and then executing. So for, in regard to the podcast, when you and I started doing this together, you weren't really listening to any podcasts, or you said that you had listened to S-Town.
Yep, that was it.
And you didn't really love it, or the ending left you wanting.
Yeah.
I had not listened, but I have since listened to S-Town.
Did you love it?
I loved it,
dude. Yeah, it's incredible.
It's right? So fascinating. It's
totally incredible.
That guy,
yeah.
I forget his name, John McLemore, I think, was such a fascinating figure.
I mean, it's amazing, right?
A compelling figure.
Yep. It seems like a once in a lifetime kind of find, to find somebody like that who nobody knows. Obviously he was just a normal civilian. But have him be that fascinating, and then
so good.
Yeah. Won't spoil it.
Have you listened? Have you started listening to podcasts now that you are officially a podcaster?
I haven't. Okay. I listened to this one, you and the one we do. I had never listened to this one either up until probably a month ago.
Oh, okay.
And then I started listening to pieces to find stuff to write on for Beach Grit. And I thought, oh, some of it's not too bad.
Did you find it to be, did it inform your experience as a podcaster moving forward? Kind of listening and reflecting, going, oh, I should be doing this or
that? A little bit. I mean, I realized that, when I stumble over words or talk too long, things like that, that it gets annoying. Yeah. So try to keep stuff shorter, even though I have not succeeded today. I've really gone on some long tangents.
One podcast I want to recommend to you if you liked S-Town or just kind of something similar to that, was, it's called Dirty John.
Okay.
Oh my God, dude. It's so good. It's also a 6-part series.
Okay.
It was made by the LA Times. They wrote an article about a guy. It's a true story. The scum of the earth. Dirty John.
Okay.
Now, here's why the story's relevant to me. Spoiler alert, but he ends up getting killed.
Okay.
My girlfriend saw him get killed.
Really?
Yes.
How's that?
Her voice is the 911 call in the final episode of the season.
Did you know?
Yes. Because at some point she mentioned to me that she had witnessed this horrific scenario.
Like a grisly murder.
Yeah. 6 months ago. And I was like, oh my God.
Was it a gun or a knife or?
It's a stabbing.
Okay.
He gets stabbed in the eye.
Wow.
He gets stabbed. Like, this guy had it coming. Sure. Like, if you've ever thought a horrific murder like that was justifiable, this is the version of that. And even the sheriff, the Orange County sheriff, and people who had dealt with him say on the podcast, they're like, this was the single scariest man I've ever met in my life.
Oh, I'm excited.
This guy is pure evil. And he ends up taking full advantage of this woman and gets married to her and like bleeds her dry, and her kids kind of retaliate against him, and he threatens the kids' lives and all that sort of stuff. And ultimately, in the end, he picks on the meekest, mildest, 5-foot tall, 100-pound girl, and he's going to kidnap her, and she ends up getting the knife from him and killing him.
That's pretty. And how did your girlfriend?
My girlfriend was, she in Newport Beach. She's leaving work and she hears screaming. So her and another guy who happened to be nearby run to the scene of this screaming. And it's this little girl pushing this guy off of her, and he's bleeding out everywhere because my girlfriend's like, dude, the guy, he was stabbed in the eye. I didn't know if he was going to live or not. The ambulance came, and, didn't leave immediately. They put him in the ambulance, and I thought they were going to like bolt it to the hospital, and they didn't.
They just sat there with him.
So, and at the time, my girlfriend didn't know who the guy was. She's sure. like, I don't know if he was a bad guy or a good guy or what the scenario was, but I gave my report, and like, I'm the one that made the 911 call.
That is totally epic.
6 months later, she's like, oh my God, I found out more information about that murder. The LA Times wrote a six articles, beginning, middle, and end of this event, and also produced a podcast for
Wow.
And so we were like going to Zion, and we like listened to the whole thing from beginning to end. And we got to the final episode, and her voice came on.
Did
it was
you,
like,
did no you guys way. Laugh?
We were dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were laughing.
Being podcast famous, I reckon, would be pretty good.
Totally. Yeah. Because this is a hugely famous sure. podcast now, but it was traumatic. Like, honestly, me just explaining it to you right now, I'm kind of traumatized by.
Was she traumatized?
Yeah. I mean,
did she have to go to counseling and stuff?
No, she's like shockingly stoic.
Yeah.
And is less traumatized by it than I would expect her to be.
She was just like, yeah, guy got stabbed in the eyes, bled out all over this little girl.
Shit kind happens. Of. Kind yeah. of. She had processed it enough by the time that she delivered it to me that like it wasn't a traumatic for her. But then re-listening to the episode was, I think, a little bit
sure.
re-traumatizing. But she got pulled over for speeding 10 minutes afterwards.
Oh, amazing.
So it was like we wanted to tell the cop like, hey, no, the reason why is we were just like out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and like whatever. It's a long, sordid story that I just gave you, but phenomenal listening.
Okay.
Dirty John.
I'm in. Thank you. Yeah, that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Like, it is my favorite podcast I've listened to in a while.
That's perfect, because I'm driving to Jackson Hole, Wyoming for Christmas. So this is going to be...
That's 6 hours of listening right there.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And in the way that, like, the guy from S-Town was compelling, this Dirty John character is super... And then the woman who he took advantage of and her mother are fascinating figures.
Okay.
Just complete enablers.
Oh yeah.
You know, and then I'm like in. She is, but then you hear her mom and how her mom treated her. It's like, oh my God, obviously.
Okay.
That's why she's the way she is, because her mom, you know.
Dirty John. That should be John Florence's new nickname too. Dirty John.
I think we go Dirty Gabe.
Yeah, Dirty Gabe. Doesn't have the ring though. Dirty John sounds good.
It does. Yeah, it does. So that's my podcast listening recommendation. What another thing I was gonna ask you is like, I've considered with this podcast adding video.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple of different ways I've considered it. Like, Joe Rogan does basically three stagnant camera angles in the room, like one wide shot and then one on each of him and the person that he's interviewing. And they just cut between those. It's not the awk cast where they're cutting to surf footage or anything like that. It's just giving people an additional platform to listen to and to see what the people look like. I never wanted to do it because I feel like it kind of undercuts the value of the podcast platform. However, people ask for it and people seem to like it. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, people don't need to see me at all. But if that's
but they
the,
want
if
to.
That's what the people want, then sure. I'm not against anything, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I will implement that. I think logistically there's just a couple minor hurdles, sure. but I'm down to do it. The other thing is just doing like ancillary segments. Like, we could actually, this would not undercut the show. This would actually elevate the show. If we did like a YouTube follow-up episode that was 3 minutes long of you reading the comments section,
oh.
like pick the most hateful comments about you and I, and then just a video of you reading them.
That would be good.
Like how, you know, late night shows do read angry tweets sure, or sure. something like that.
Yeah.
That could be funny.
I would like that.
It would be funny. And then it would, again, get people to write more angry comments the next time, which makes yep. that funnier. And then also get people to listen to the show. What are these people commenting about?
It builds on the funny. Speaking of, real quick, building on the funny, did yeah. you listen to Stab's new podcast, The Drop?
I did not.
They have three episodes. They I did know. Like, they
have a fourth, actually.
Oh, really?
They haven't advertised the fourth, but if you go to their SoundCloud page, there's a fourth.
And they just do them. How do they do them so quickly? They do them every day or something.
Well, because everybody's in Hawaii right now. So they just gang taped a bunch of them.
So they just got, how long are they?
An hour to hour and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, so first one was with, the way that the format currently is Shane Dorian and Nathan Webster are hosting, they're co-hosting and interviewing individuals. The first one was Chloe Andino, second one was Ronnie Blakey, third one Jake Patterson. Fourth one looks like a freestyle episode where they're just riffing on the wave pool, the pipe masters, all that sort of stuff. I haven't listened to any, not because I don't want to, it's just I've been listening to Dirty John and other podcasts. Yeah. I'm like, don't have enough time. I will get to it. that format is not sustainable, obviously. Nathan Webster and Shane Dorian live in different countries, so they're not going to be able to sustain that. The Skyping thing never really works, so they shouldn't try to pursue that. I don't know if they have an alternative format that they're going to pursue moving forward that is sustainable.
I mean, is this just season one? Like, maybe. Are they going to do, like, season one of The Drop is 6 episodes?
Yeah, I don't know. Mm. I'll get to the bottom. I'm going to talk to Ashton coming up here soon. Mm. And so I'll get to the bottom of it and figure it out. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, I don't know. It seemed, I listened to part of one. It seems fine enough. Yeah. Like, you know, it's Shane and Noodles, I think, are interesting characters. And I think that, you know, they have, I don't know, right?
Yeah. It's okay. No, I agree. I think it always, there's a sussing out process or a learning curve anyway, with any hosting or any just new platform, period. So like Shane Dorian and Nathan will need to figure out, they'll just need 10 episodes sure. of Runway to figure out their dynamic.
I don't think Ashton's having fun. I texted him last week.
Not having fun with what?
Just with anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In life?
Like, I don't know. I said like I had dropped some other bomb on Stab and said, come on, take the bait or something. Like at some point here, just don't be such a fucking pussy. And he responded a couple days later, like, I'm so busy, too busy to whatever. Like, and I was like, it doesn't sound like you're having fun. And he, again, a couple days later, said, like, talked about how busy he was. And I was thinking, wow, if you're not having fun working for a surf thing,
yeah.
then you should quit.
For an irreverent surf thing.
I mean, it's not Stab, let's be honest. Stab is not irreverent at all anymore. Okay. Stab is reverent.
They posted an article about pro surfers' hottest girlfriends. That's irreverent, you know?
No, I mean...
I mean, it's not original.
Yeah.
We've done it, and it's not original when we did it, but it's not... I would call it irreverent.
Irreverent?
Mm. I wouldn't call it reverent.
I think the Stab had a house out on the North Shore this year. For how I think many, so too. They had the entire crew out there. For how many people they had out there, it was it seemed like an oddly small and lackluster amount of stuff yeah. that they produce.
I'm curious, when you said, are you having fun? Is it in reference to you picking fights with them and, hey, you're not having fun with these fighting scenarios or just you're not having fun in general?
I mean, maybe that's how he took it. I meant, are you having fun in general? And the way he responded seemed pretty general. It was I'm so busy. And yeah, it made me feel sorry for poor Ashton and all the poor people at Stab.
The article you did post about them recently was about Macintosh telling advertisers to put a leash on you.
Yeah.
Fucking that's funny.
Macintosh. Yeah, it was good. It was a good one.
I loved that article.
It was good. It's fun.
Not only because of the content, but like I thought it was well written.
Oh, really? I should go back and reread it.
Go back and reread it. Because there's times where I'll skim just to find like the gist. And that one I was like, I read every single line because it kept me engaged. Okay. Cool. Do you want to recap that or just move on?
I mean, I think it's... is it exciting enough?
I don't know.
It's pretty boring.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, gossipy part is fun.
I mean, I'm happy. Yeah.
Well, Macintosh. I guess the reason why it's interesting to me is like... this industry is still small enough and insular enough to where like a couple of advertisers kind of rule it and spend their money where they spend their money matters. And they feel like they can dictate your content by threatening a different media outlet with withholding advertising dollars.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting.
Yeah. Funny. And you know, I mean, I don't know if Sam thinks he knows the industry is four people big. I don't know if he thinks that I, you know, don't find out what he's doing, but I warned him privately before not to do it anymore. And he continued to do it. So that's why.
What did he do?
Public. I mean, he just goes to advertisers and says, you know, you've got to pull out of Beach Grit. You can't advertise with Beach Grit. And if you continue with Beach Grit, then, you know, back when that was part of Surf Stitch, for example, one of our advertisers, he said, you're on Beach Grit, you're out of Surf Stitch entirely. Like, and you know, that back then, I think people thought Surf Stitch was actually going to be something. So, you know, we lost an advertiser there, which is illegal in the United States to do. It's called tortious interference. I warned Sam, he didn't listen. So I had to warn him publicly. And if he continues not to listen, then it's game on every day.
Can Beach Grit survive without those few big surf industry advertisers?
Sure. I mean, and we've never aimed. That's not our goal to get, you know, big advertisers. I don't want to look like Stab, right? I don't want to have the page wrapped with Summer Bright beer with hideous advertorial. I like what Beach Grit is, and I think that there's, I think we have a great audience, and I think that the sponsors or advertisers who want to reach that audience, you know, that's what we're there for. We're not, I don't feel we're competing with Stab at all for for the same eyeballs. I don't think there's any competition, full stop. I think that if everybody's doing good content,
agreed,
it's good for everybody. I wish Stab would just do better content.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. And then also just leave us alone. Like, or if you want to snipe, then do it publicly. Don't go and do like play dirty pool behind the scenes.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chaz, coming into the 90-minute mark, let's wrap up 2017 with the final Barrel or Nah segment of the year. Hiding purchases from your wife, barrel or nah?
I'm going to say barrel, I guess.
You're down for hiding purchases.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, right? Oh, hiding purchases, not like Christmas presents.
Not Christmas presents. Oh, hiding, I could see hiding, why you thought that.
Hiding stuff for yourself.
This came from the comments section on Beach Grit from an article that you wrote. Geez, it might have been your like soliloquy about the first surfboard that you had, right?
Yeah.
That was an article.
Yeah.
Derek and Chaz Michael Michaels got into it in the comments section. I think Derek was saying like he bought a board without telling. Is he married?
He's not.
Okay. Well, somebody said something. Maybe it was Chaz saying, oh, that's what it was. It was Chaz saying he bought a Tomo, and kept it in his car so his wife wouldn't know about it.
Oh, yeah.
And like then finally surfed it, and like it was a whole ordeal. And then Derek chimed in and said, oh man, you have to hide purchases from your wife? That seems super petty. And then Chaz was like, yeah, of course you do. That's what you do in a marriage. You have to hide purchases.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm going to go, as much as I like Chaz Michael Michaels, I'm going to go with Derek then on the nah. It's if you're an adult man hiding things, purchases from your wife, then like if you don't believe in it strongly enough to say, hey, this is what I need, or this is what I'm getting, then I'm gonna go no. You
full transparency then in the spousal relationship?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I think if you're hiding things like that, it's indicative of a bigger problem.
Sure. And I think half of it too is just hiding boring stuff, right? Like, I mean, or it's not necessarily hiding, but like, I mean, so I'm sorry. I believe in full transparency unless the thing is boring. Like if I'm going to bore my wife with buying something and, hey, guess what I bought today? Like, I don't believe in full transparency that way of like boring the other person to death.
Of course.
But in terms of like any, if she wants to know anything, sure.
This seems to be though, I'm hiding it because she'll get mad at me if she knows I bought another surfboard.
Yeah.
So if you're hiding it for that, I think again, indicative of a bigger problem where like you guys don't have a full understanding of your finances, what's acceptable to what's, you know, surplus budget, or she doesn't agree with your ideology of surfing's important to you. So that's a bigger problem or whatever.
Or doesn't understand that you need more than one board to surf.
Yeah.
That's important.
Totally. That was Derek's point.
Yeah. Everybody needs more than one board. Yeah.
All right. So do not hide purchases from your wife.
Nope.
And I would say take it a step further and dig in with communication and understand why you would want to do that. And secondly, why she would want to prevent you from doing that and address that problem.
Yep.
So
smart.
All right. Barrel or nah, thanking God when you win something.
Oh yeah. I'm going to say, you know, it's just become cliche. So I'm going to say nah. I'm not going to say on the sentiment. That's totally fine and great. But I'm going to say which is why I thought it was funny when Gabriel took it. One, I don't know if he knew what he was saying in English exactly by saying God is on his side. But it was really, really funny. So I'm going to barrel him, but everyone else gets a nah.
Yeah. I guess it's cliche for rappers and for Brazilian surfers to do it. I don't know that it's cliche for everybody to do it.
But
I don't see a lot of Oscar winners like win best actor.
That's true.
And then go up and do it.
But there's, you know, in sports, I think it's pretty cliche. Like tennis, you know, football, soccer. Like I think it's I just like to thank God, boxing. Yeah.
You know how it always made me feel is certainly with the instance of rappers. Like, well, the song that you just won the Grammy for, you're talking about like slapping bitches and hoes and like doing coke off prostitutes, you know, like, so does that fit in also with your religious ideology? Or then with Gabriel Medina, like his tactical kind of no holds barred surfing thing. Does that God fit wants. In with your religion? Yeah. You know, and I'm not saying it doesn't, but does it?
Yeah,
that's a question.
Yeah.
And then further, you're saying God is on your side when you win. Well, what does that say about God that you lost your next heat?
Or what does it say about God versus the other guy? Like, right?
Yeah.
So God does not like, theoretically, John.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's a pretty big claim.
It brings up a lot of interesting points.
It's a big claim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
when it's not cliche. So I liked it when Gabriel said it, because I truly believe that Gabriel believes that God is on his side, right?
Yeah. But you also implied that his God was a Christian God.
Sure.
Do we know that?
I do. I think he is. I think as far as I know.
It's a fair assumption.
I think that Gabriel's evangelically from what I've assessed. I don't know for a fact.
I don't either.
We'll get to the bottom of this.
A fair presumption culturally.
I mean, the only things he'd be, let's be frank, is he's either Protestant or Catholic, right? It's one of those two.
Yeah.
He's not, he ain't talking about Yahweh or Allah.
There. No. But it's fun to think that he could be.
I mean, maybe.
Like, he might have some crazy religion that we haven't even conceived of. That,
I'll get to the bottom. Yeah. I would like to get to the bottom of Gabriel Medina's religion.
What if he believes a religion that justifies the tactical maneuvers that he's putting on in the heat? So I'm saying, hey, this doesn't conform with Christianity, your actions, but maybe it perfectly conforms
with his religion,
with the God that he is thanking.
Could be.
And it is on his side.
Yep.
All right. We'll get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Next year, 2018, we'll come back with that information. This is a related topic. Barrel or nah? Bob Dylan.
Oh, Bobby D. Bob Dylan, I think, at this point, is nah.
Really?
I mean, he's just gone on way too long, right? He's still around.
Just like his songs and his harmonica riffs.
Exactly.
He has gone on way too long.
Yep, it's true. Like, Bob Dylan, I think, has been super barrel during multiple times in his 350-year career.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I think this iteration is nah.
So the reason I brought it up was because you used it as a reference point. You used it as an argument about the wave pool, was it? You want to be on the right side.
Yeah, I didn't want to be on the wrong side of history. I didn't want to be screaming at the electric guitar, because we should all be folk.
Right. I think Bob Dylan is super barrel.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously an icon. Way more barrel than Iggy Pop. Oh, those damn Iggy Pop commercials. They know there's going to be... how many spots over the course of an event?
Yeah.
Like hundreds of, advertisements airing. And all they can find time for is to make two.
Right. I've always complained about that.
Over and over. Like,
yeah.
Where even if you liked the thing, you're guaranteed going to hate it by the end of the event.
Right. Yeah, I agree. There's way too much redundancy in the ad space for all events.
It's not like it's a surprise.
Across sponsors.
Yeah, it's not like it's a surprise.
Well, the songs... to then become grating.
Yeah.
It's like the Jeep commercial comes on and it's like, oh, this song again?
I know. No,
that's the worst. So there needs to be,
there definitely needs to be
more, less
they just redundancy. Shouldn't allow. They just shouldn't allow. They should just say, hey, Bill Wong, you can run this one, 30 times, but that's it. You can't run it more than 30 times. So we'll either, just do a placard that says Bill Wong or something, but we're not going to do that again.
Well, back to Dylan, I feel like you use that example where he went electric when everybody expected folk, he went electric, but then his career has evolved 10 times since
then.
Became Christian and did a couple Christian albums. Then he went back.
And it's his circus, weird honky tonk circus thing. That was, I think, a very much later iteration that was just like so annoying when he had a top hat and crazy mustache.
See, to me, I'm all in. It's like, whatever you do, I'm not going to love them all equally, but I'm in with supporting you as an artist. And I'm not convinced that your best album has been released yet. Like,
really?
They gave up on when his early folk stuff was happening and then he went electric guitar. They were just like, oh, he's jumped the shark. That folk stuff Free Will and Bob Dylan will never be beat.
Yeah.
But then he goes through two, three other iterations and hits you with Blood on the Tracks.
That's true.
And you're just like,
Blood
on the Tracks. You can't even really compare it to Free Will and Bob Dylan because it's so different. It's a different genre.
Yep.
It's a different hymn. So is there going to be something later that comes? And that's where great art comes from, is from great artists. And of course they're going to have swing and a miss and duds here and there, but I'm banking on, we know he's a great artist.
Sure.
So I'm putting my money on Just give me more of what you're doing.
I will match your money with the nothing else good is coming out of Bob Dylan.
Okay. I saw him in concert a while back, like a couple of years ago. It was awful.
Yeah, he's a frail man.
It was unintelligible.
Yeah.
Just completely. But then I was still in. I was like, because that's part of it, you know? So I'm going full barrel for Bob Dylan.
Okay.
All right. Final barrel and off for 2017.
Big one.
Also related to the Pipe Masters. Painting women on your surfboard.
Hmm. Who had a good one?
Idolo
had a good one. I'm going to say barrel.
He had from torso down.
Yep.
Big booty from behind, a shot from behind, just the big booty drawn on with the G-string.
Of total barrel.
So he's laying on her booty is the idea.
Yeah. It's total barrel.
Total barrel.
Yeah.
I agree. Super barrel.
Yeah.
When I saw it, I thought the exact same thing about wanting Gabriel Medina to be more of a villain.
Yep.
I was like, sweet.
Idolo.
Yeah. This is controversial. The WSL is probably going to try to like keep that out of the frame.
You think so?
They ended up getting a shot of it when they like panned back away from the interview. But in theory, I think that there's somebody, a producer, who would ideally not want it in the shot, which makes me want it more, which is like...
See, I could go on all day about that dang WSL and the boredom factory.
And again, this is a presumption. I don't know that they tried to do that, but I was just like, sweet, Idolo.
Yeah.
Of course, this is hilarious, you want to lay on this, and it's funny. And like, bring it to the Pipe Masters where everybody's going to see it. And remember Kelly doing that back in the 90s?
Yep.
He had an entire quiver of different women.
Yeah.
He had a blonde, a brunette, a redhead. It was radical.
It's good. Bring it back. So, yeah.
I'm all for it. I would love to see the Women's World Tour embracing the same thing.
With just men. Just like a Speedo-wearing trunk of a man would be hunky so dude. Good.
Hunky dude drawn on Courtney Conlogue's board.
Thunder from Down Under would be so real good.
So good. All right, Chaz, anything else you want to say to go out on 2017?
It's been a fun year. Thank you, David Lee, for all this time. These chats are more and more enjoyable every time. I don't know how they are to listen to, but I have a good time.
Thank you. I'll tell you what. Let's find out how they are to listen to by asking listeners to tell us their opinion in the comments section on Beach Grit.
Perfect.
That's what we love to read. Go in there with my hazmat suit and like look through it all.
Yeah.
And then beachgrid.com, of course, is where you find everything that Chaz and I were referencing in this episode. Surfsplendorpodcast.com. I'll post this episode with all the video links, the imagery from Idolo Ferrer's board.
I really like Idolo.
I do too.
He's fun.
Phenomenal surfer too. Do you want to post a Bob Dylan song on the website for them to listen to? Do you have a favorite that you want to shout out and I'll post?
I do like, it's really hard to beat, what is Times Era Changing?
Okay. I'm down for it.
Yeah.
Off the early stuff. That was the folk.
Yeah.
You know, fighting.
Folky Dylan.
Yeah. Fighting the, wars that were going on and all that sort of stuff. And then we'll post a link to Derek's book, all that sort of stuff, surfsplendorpodcast.com. And I guess until 2 weeks from now, which will be the first episode of 2018.
We'll be talking about the 2018 WSL upcoming season.
Yeah, super exciting. So until then, enjoy Christmas, get a couple of waves, and get barrel.